So I hope the gospel from last week is still fresh in our mind, and that all throughout this past week we're wrestling with that question that Jesus asked, "Who do you say that I am?" A profound response from Simon Peter. He received that inspiration from God the Father, and he was able to say clearly, precisely, that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then we heard how the rest of that conversation went, where Jesus changed his name from Simon to Peter, which means rock, and then on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will never prevail. Whatever you bind on earth is bound, and whatever you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. These two foundational doctrines of papal infallibility and the indefectibility of the church. God the Father's desire is to establish the church founded on the confession, but founded on the person of Peter. What an amazing event, moment in life that must have been for Peter. Maybe even a little pride getting there. Maybe feeling the weight of those words, maybe not really fully realizing what was being said to him. But what an amazing time that was for him. How exciting that must have been to be called out, to be called up, to lead this new organization. But just so quickly, I mean, we have a week in space, but this happened, what we had today happened immediately following. So you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. The gates of hell won't prevail. And then, get behind me, Satan. It must, like Charles Dickens' A Tale of Two Cities, the best of times and the worst of times. To be entrusted with the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and then to be called Satan. You're an obstacle to me. But Jesus tells us why he told him that. I mean, why was he able to become Peter? Because he wasn't thinking like man. He was thinking like God. Jesus said, you didn't come to this on your own kind of calculus. But God the Father told you that who I am. But just that quick, he reverted back to a human way of thinking. God forbid, Lord, this will never happen to you. Maybe he's feeling the weight of his role as a prime minister, and he's going to defend the leader, and that no one will ever hurt him or attack him, definitely not kill him. God forbid, Lord. Maybe there was some of that bravado of living out this new mission that was given him. But Jesus had other plans. Get behind me, Satan. You're an obstacle to me. You're an obstacle. You're being a scandal to me, is what he said. And that word scandal means a little rock. I just called you the big rock, the biggest rock ever. And on this big rock is the foundation of my church. But now you're being a stumbling stone. You're being a little trap that someone has put into my path. All because you're thinking like man. And not like God. I'm sure none of us have ever fallen into that trap. I'm sure none of us ever try to impose our will and a human way of thinking on God and his plan for our life and for his church. I'm sure none of us have ever said, nope, that can't be God's will. Because there's suffering involved, and God wants me happy and healthy and rich. So anything that's not according to that plan, that's not God's plan. So let's turn the page and find where it really is God's plan. We've grown so comfortable in our society, and we really are averse to the suffering that's necessary for our salvation. If anyone wishes to be my disciple, if anyone wishes to be my student, they must deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. The necessary conditions for discipleship, the necessary conditions for salvation. Do we think like God or do we think like man? Do we think that we're being punished when we face suffering, when we face obstacles, when things don't go our way? Jeremiah in the first reading was facing the same obstacle. It's a wonderful story. You should spend time reading the story of Jeremiah in the Old Testament, one of the major prophets, called at a very young age, consecrated in the womb of his mother, and he didn't want to be called. No, don't call me. I don't know how to speak. I'm too young. You got the wrong guy, God. I will put my words into your mouth. You are the right one. Go and tell them what I have told you to tell them. And as a young man, he had to face the promised land, the chosen people, the Israelites, to tell them that they were headed for sure and certain destruction, that they had been unfaithful to the covenant, and they didn't change their ways, that they were going to face eternal damnation. What a great message to be sent to give to your family members, to your friends, to your countrymen. And he was faced with ridicule, with derision. They tried to kill him, and eventually they did. They put him in prison. They locked him in a well in the ground. The people in power who were living a comfortable life did not want to be reminded of the challenges of the high cost of discipleship. So they sought to silence the voice. Today, we just write letters against our pastor to get him removed. But they buried him in the tomb. They put him in the well and eventually killed him. And that's where he said today, "You duped me, O Lord. You fooled me. You deceived me." One of the translations says, "You seduced me. You spoke sweet, soft words to me. You got me here, and now look what you've done to me." Again, I'm sure none of us could ever relate to that. None of us have ever tried to speak the truth to our husband or to our wife or to our children, to our coworkers and to our families. I'm sure none of us have ever tried to speak the truth and have been met with ridicule and derision, of being boxed out of the family, not invited to the parties. That's what Jeremiah today says. That's it, I'm done. I'm not going to speak your name ever again. It's not worth it. I'd rather be liked by my family. I'd rather be invited to the parties. I'd rather be part of the in crowd than to be faithful to you, God. It's just not worth it. Again, I'm sure none of us can relate to this. But what happened to Jeremiah as he sought to avoid the difficulty in the external world? That word that God gave him, the word that he was commanded to preach, became like a fire in his belly, he said. He cannot contain it. He must speak that truth. And this is what should happen to each one of us. Because if you've been baptized, you are a prophet. And that same word of truth, that same word of life has been implanted into you. And you've been given the same command, the same charge, to go out into the world, which might mean go to the person sitting next to you right now and tell them you're on the wrong path. If you don't convert, you're heading to hell. It's not an easy message to give, but it's a necessary. If someone was sick and you had the medicine, it would be cruel not to give it to them. How many people do we know that are dying in their sin, but because we're afraid that we might be ostracized, we don't say a word? Pray to Jeremiah to allow that word to bubble up inside of you, to be inflamed inside of you, so that you have no choice but to speak the truth, come what may. And this is what St. Paul is saying. I urge you, brothers and sisters, to offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. Be willing to give up everything. I urge you, brothers and sisters, to offer your bodies by the mercies of God as a living sacrifice. Do not be conformed to this world. Don't allow them to tell you how you're supposed to be. Don't let them to tell you what the church is supposed to be. But be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Have you allowed the gospel to change your mind? Have you allowed the catechism and the doctrine and the dictates of the church to change your mind? And that this is what is real, that this is what is good and beautiful and true. Or do we live in this battle between what I want in my life and how I think my life should be, as opposed to the hard dictates of the church? And I just start to cut out those things the church asks of me because it makes my life a little uncomfortable, a little inconvenient. I might get kicked out of the cool kids club. Do not be conformed by this world. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind. Then you can discern what is God's will. Then you can discern what is good and is pleasing and is true. So often we try to determine what is God's will for my life. I try to make up my own list of what is good and what is pleasing and what is true. And then I say, okay, God, put your stamp of approval on this. It was a challenging word that Jesus gave to Peter. It's a challenging word that he gives to each one of us. You are thinking like man. Get behind me, Satan. Get behind me. I've already told you, Simon, follow me. Quit trying to lead. It's the same invitation to each one of us this morning. And we're being invited into the cross, into those difficult moments, because that's what's required for a radical conversion. Simon Peter was riding high, and then he got kicked down low so that he could find his right place behind Jesus. And if we're not following him, then we're in the wrong space. Ask for that grace to allow the gospel to transform your mind, transform your heart, so that we can stop thinking like man and start thinking like God. We need a transformed mind these days. We need to know what is God's will. We need to be willing to offer our lives as a living sacrifice, to lose our life for his sake. This is the path that Christ has put before each one of us. Are we willing to say yes today? Are we willing to die to ourselves once again so that he can live inside of us forever?